Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Heard about Anchor. It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
This is the first episode of the Danny Dimes Primetime Series, episode but this is episode 109 of YWC Football Talk overall. You already know who's here with me. It is Big Rat 310. We got a lot to cover. We're going to be live reacting to Daniel Jones in primetime. We're going to be talking a bit from last Sunday's game between the Pats and the Dolphins. And we're going to be talking week two as a whole. So, Big Rat, how are you feeling?
Feeling great. Thanks for having me on again. I'm excited to be here. I always love doing the show. It's always a fun time. And, you know, nothing makes a Daniel Jones primetime game go by nicer than doing this podcast with you. We saw his famous fall against the Eagles on Thursday Night Football last year, which we commented on live on the show as it happened. And then we also saw him against the Bucks when he was, like, very bad. And the Giants probably should have won that game if he had just been a little bit better. So it's always an adventure, and excited for what happens today.
Yeah, exactly. Because I was saying that too. Because remember, folks, like I said, episode 1 of 3. Because I feel bad for him because his next two primetime games are both Monday Night Football, but one's the Chiefs and one's the Buccaneers. So we're in for some. So the next, yeah. Because I remember last year when we did this, I just had you on, and then we talked it out, and then I think I realized afterwards, I realized in the second one, hey, we both did the last two Daniel Jones primetime games. So for as long as he's in the league or with the Giants, at least, this is just going to become a thing.
And yeah, it wasn't planned. It just worked out that way. And then sure enough, this week when he's on primetime, it's like, oh, the Dolphins just played the Patriots, and the Dolphins and the Patriots both have AFC East games this weekend. It couldn't be more perfect. It couldn't be more of a setup for me to come on again.
Exactly. And I guess we'll have to rip that. I was going to save it for a little bit later, but let's rip that Band-Aid off first. For the folks, you obviously know, Phil and I talked a bit about it, talked a lot about it last Sunday on my post-game recap episode, and then I brought it up again with Tommy on Monday a bit. But I want to get – I unfortunately now have to get the winning perspective of it in what was a very crucial and very, very nail-biter of a 17-16 finish, a finish I didn't think could see coming. But at the same time, too, I feel like the Pats and the Dolphins in the B-Flow era, I don't think the over has hit many times, because I remember both games last year were really low scoring, and then so was this one.
Yeah, I think the under might have hit in the 2019 finale because I think that was, what, 27-24? So I think the under hit in that one. But, the over, I think, hit in 2019 week 17. But other than that, yeah, it's been the under almost every time. These division games are always going to be close. These two divisions in particular are very well coached, which also means the games will be close. And these two defenses tend to have, like, pretty good personnel over the last few years, which would also make the games kind of close. So, like, even the Patriots defense last year, I know it was a little disappointing, but it still did really nice against the Dolphins in December last year. It's kind of like a modern day Steelers Ravens almost. It doesn't have the violence and the, like, animosity the same way, But yeah, there are always, it seems like in the B-Flow Belichick eras, they're always going to be like low scoring, back and forth, really tight games moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's one thing I was going to say too, where, and also the other thing is, I feel like there's not the fan aggression that you see. Like, I've seen shirts from Pittsburgh before where it says F blank CK the Ravens, and it just says, I would like to buy a vowel. out of all the AFC East teams with the Patriots, like, I've never personally seen like any hate towards the, like, you see hate towards the Dolphins, but you don't see it like, I think, the same length as like what you see Bills fans hate the Patriots, or like Jets hate the Patriots because of the whole Boston New York thing. I feel like New England Miami, it's like you don't really get much of it as, oh, Daniel Jones is a nice run but falls short of the yard of gainage, or the fall short of the first down marker. Let's see what he does here on third and one. But yeah, honestly, the one takeaway I have from Sunday for my end, both quarterbacks look really good. I like the performance from both guys. Mac, I was really happy with. Tua looked good too. But the one thing I want to get down with you is, what did you think of bringing in Jacoby Brissett?
So I liked it. I heard your podcast with Phil, and I can understand, you know, I can understand why fans like might view it as like unorthodox, to say the least. Obviously, so last year, the Colts did this a lot with Jacoby Brissett because Phillip Rivers didn't want to take the QB sneaks. He didn't want to take the violence on the QB sneaks, even though he's like a tall guy. So they would bring in Jacoby for those plays, and it was pretty effective. And for the Dolphins, you know, Tua is certainly not afraid to take a hit. It has nothing to do with that. But it just seemed like something that would maximize their chances on short yardage. And I have no problem with it. We've seen this a lot with the Dolphins and with B-Flow. They do unorthodox things. And I like that a lot of my team. They're not afraid to do things that seem like controversial, but like really just help the team win. The Dolphins, important context to add it, like to what you and Phil talked about on the other podcast, you know, the Dolphins are terrible in short yardage historically in the Brian Flores era. They've been horrible. Like 2 years ago, they thought Kalen Ballage would be the answer, and it didn't work. Last year, they thought they used Jordan Howard a lot on those plays, but then they cut him before the season even ended. Like, they're terrible in short yardage. So I just don't mind. Like, I don't mind having him in there for a very specific role. It's very effective, as we saw. It freaking won them the game, like on that last drive, which we'll talk about. So I have no problem with it. Like, I think it makes sense. You know, there's a logical reason behind it. I don't think it says anything about Tua or their confidence in him or anything like that. It's just a pure, like, mathematical thing. Like, it's a very, very pure basic math.
I also look at it the way, too, where I don't know Tua's exact height, but Jacoby Brissett, obviously a lot taller, that when you have those – oh, what a sneak by Daniel Jones there. He's going – oh, he's running. Is he going to do it? Okay, I think this is coming back for a hold, but Daniel Jones just ran, like, 40 – that 2 years in a row now, like this, oh, this is why this podcast is perfect. I kind of hope it stays, but I feel like it's coming back.
But it is. Spoiler alert, because I'm a little bit ahead, it is. But it's not coming back the whole way. It's just at one point in the run. It's not the whole, so he'll get some of the, I think the way this works is it's spot of the foul, so he'll get like half of the rushing yardage and then 10 yards back from that spot. So
I see it right there on, I think that's CJ Board. Yeah, that's a clear holding. So he's at like the, I don't know where he'll end up, but we'll see where they exactly mark him on here. I just have my TV muted, which a lot of Giants fans in the crowd, not that far of a drive, I guess. But
they're in the red zone. Damn.
I figured they'd be in the red zone. All I need is for this game just to under to hit and the football team to win, and I win some cash. But the thing I was going to say with Sunday, too, is I just look at it as well where you have Jacoby Brissett, who's bigger. Like, just not bigger, like, weight-wise, but, like, height-wise. Yeah. So where, you know what, if you need him to extend, you can do it without the ease. And, like, you can do it where there's more ease. I feel like with Tua, there's more risk of injury happening just because he's obviously a smaller quarterback. But the other thing I'll point out, too, with Miami that I hated, but I get why you guys did it, was you guys used the slant routes to your advantage, and you really drew in New England to basically – think that they were going to go out, but then you cut in and did the slant runs and got a lot of good short yardage first downs. Like, that was a very, I would say this, a well-coached game by Brian Flores.
Yeah, the slant was very effective. I mean, as you can imagine with Waddle, like, it's such a great play because he's so fast. He's not just straight line speed fast. He's insanely agile. He's insanely quick. And, you know, the logic being when Fuller comes back, The belief is, you know, Waddle stretches you horizontally. And you saw that on that touchdown. Like, they threw that pass to him, and he ran all the way to the sideline and jumped at the last moment and was able to get in. A more impressive touchdown than I think I got credit for. A lot of receivers don't score there. He did, because he's just so quick and so athletic that he jumped from, like, the two-yard line and he got in. So he stretches you horizontally, which the slant takes advantage of, and then Fuller will stretch you vertically and will stretch you down the field. And so for that reason, the slant route is very complementary. And the slant worked with Devontae because he's just so physical. And, like, he's not going to have the breakaway speed that Waddle will have, but he's just hard to bring down. He'll get extra yards off his slant. And you saw, like, on that play on the last drive, first and 14, they threw the slant to Devontae, and it nearly got the first down. I mean, that was the biggest play of that drive. Like, that's what helped them get, like, the short yardage conversions to be able to ice the game. And so even for someone like Devontae Parker, who doesn't have 4-3 speed, it was still very effective. So, yeah, it's a staple of the offense. What's his name? The CBS analyst, Vern Lundquist, maybe, who does announcing for a lot of SEC games with Gary Danielson. One of their SEC games the year after Tua left, one of them said, I forget who it was either Vern or Gary, one of them said Tua was the best slant thrower they've ever seen. So, yeah, pretty straightforward that would be a sizable part of the game plan.
And I'm not saying he's MVP, but I feel like it's the same thing that you've brought up for years with the Brady example, where 2009 he had an okay year, and then 2010, obviously, for I think it was the first ever unanimous MVP in the NFL.
Yeah.
Which were this year. I feel like Tua's a bust, they're going to trade for Watson, I feel like is not behind them, but the only way I can see it happening is if Tua just completely melts down and just doesn't get anything accomplished, which I'm trying to figure out. Are they going for the field goal here, or are they going for the touchdown?
Well, they got my guy, Sterling Shepard, a catch, which I'm very thankful for, because I have him in a lot of leagues. So that
he
was
has looked really good in these first two games so far. He's like someone who I wish other sports did this, where they had a most improved award. Like, I like the comeback player of the year, but I really like the NBA's most improved player award. Like, someone who, you know, like for example, like, look at what happened with Julius Randle this year. I know it's a New York example, as the Giants take a 10-7 lead. But you know where someone who wasn't maybe that good, and then they have this breakout season, they play great, and then instead of – because a lot of the times for comeback player of the year, and I remember Shereen Williams of PFT said this with Ryan Tannehill, it was, oh, he came back – obviously, you know, he had the injuries, but he basically came back from sucking. She also said that too, she's a big A&M supporter, and obviously Tannehill went to A&M. So
yeah.
I feel like if you do those awards for most improved – I think it could speak a little bit better than comeback, but at the same time, too, I feel like if you had both, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Like, Josh Allen last year would have won most improved if the award existed. He would have been, like, a perfect candidate for it. So, yeah, Sterling's looked very good. And on Tua, because I do want to talk about this, I do thank you and Phil. This is probably my biggest annoyance about how the game is covered. Because, as obviously, look, like, I'm a huge Dolphins fan, but I read a lot of Patriots stuff, and I have a lot of – going to what you said, like, there's less animosity, I think, on the Dolphins-Patriots end than it is the Dolphins with other teams, the Patriots with other teams. I mean, look, like, let's not get crazy here. It's not like they're friends. But, yeah, certainly it doesn't have the same animosity. It doesn't have the New York-New England rivalry. There's some respect, I think, because the Dolphins, like, pretty consistently beat the Patriots over the last 10 years in Miami. And I think that, like, changed the narrative around the Dolphins relative to the Patriots' other AFC East opponents. And, so I read a lot of Patriots stuff, and I have a lot of respect for the Patriots. I love Bill Belichick. I think he's the best coach of all time. And just reading the coverage of that game, and I saw a lot of people talk about how, like, oh, like, I think the Patriots, like, clearly outplayed the Dolphins. They only won because of the fumble and all this and that. And everyone talking about how the offense didn't look good and Tua didn't look good. It's like, I think Tua is so over-scrutinized. Like, I thought he generally played well, but because he had that pick – and it wasn't just a pick. It was like an ugly-looking interception. And it feels like some people defined his entire day by that. Like, I know Danny, our friend on Twitter, said he didn't play well, basically just because of that throw. And it wasn't even a bad decision. I saw some people say that. He said in his presser, he was trying to throw it away. He was not trying to throw that over the middle like to Albert Wilson and Gesicki. He was trying to throw it away. He got hit right as he threw it, and that's why the ball was off target. It was not an issue of decision-making or Tua trying to do too much or anything like that. He was trying to throw the ball away. He got hit at the same time. That's why the ball flopped. I don't think it's because he has a terrible arm or anything like that. I think he was hit. I think that explains everything. So, yeah, Tua, the offense played well. The offense had 9 drives.
Two of those drives were touchdown drives. One of the drives was a field goal drive. And the drive to end the game, which no one is talking about, was huge. When the Patriots fumbled, it's not like there was 40 seconds on the clock. There was still like 3.5 minutes left. Like if this Dolphins offense and Tua is as bad as a lot of people told me they were throughout that game, why didn't the Patriots stop them with 3 minutes left and three timeouts and give their offense a chance to get the ball back? Remember, the Dolphins, they had a penalty in their first play. They were on their own 3-yard line. They were on their own 3-yard line, first and 14, and they iced the game and never gave the ball back. You don't do that if the defense is so clearly better than your offense was. And I know you acknowledge that and Phil acknowledged that. And I credit the guys on the Patriots Unfiltered podcast, Paul Perillo, Mike Dussault. I listened to their review of the game, and they said, like, I don't care that the Dolphins only scored 17 points. I do not think the Patriots defense played well today. I think the Dolphins defense got the best of them. And I very much agree with that after watching the game. Like, it was a division game. It was a close game. The Dolphins obviously played ball control at times. But, like, I thought the offense generally, you know, for all the criticisms of Tua, you know, he had a higher yards per attempt than Mac did in that game. And Tua was sixth in the NFL in average depth of target. Like, idiots like Danny, who I love, I'm using that term affectionately, like, constantly talking about, like, he never goes down the field, he's a check down king. He was sixth in the NFL in depth of target on Sunday, more than Patrick Mahomes, more than Josh Allen, more than almost anyone in the league. He was sixth in average depth of target. They were going downfield. You saw it with that Devontae Parker huge catch over J.C. Jackson, which was on third down. You saw it with the play to Jaylen Waddle, the deep shot down the field. And then there was other plays that got dropped. Jaylen Waddle dropped a huge play on third and 15 that Tua made a nice throw on. If he doesn't drop that pass, that would have been a very different game. And then Devontae dropped another one, but J.C. Jackson made a good play on it over the middle. Like, I thought he played well. The pick looked terrible, but because of that pick, it just seems like, because there's so much scrutiny in the Deshaun Watson thing, it's like the pick is like how he played. Like, that's his whole performance, is that interception. And I just don't think that's fair. And I don't agree with the feedback a lot of people have been giving on Tua and on the Dolphins offense as a whole. And last thing I'll say on this spiel, Football Outsiders, I checked their DVOA rankings this weekend. Because I've heard so much about, oh, the Patriots had more yards, the Patriots ran more plays. Yeah, the Patriots ran more plays because they had longer drives. Like, it's so impressive the Patriots were as good as they were on third down. Don't get me wrong, but they were always on third down. They almost never got a first down conversion on first or second down. That's why their drives kept going so long. Like, the Dolphins were the team that had the shot plays. Like, that play to Devontae Parker, yes, that's only one play, but it's like a 36-yard play. It would take the Patriots like 5 to 6 plays to get something equivalent to that. So, like, the Dolphins are being, like, unfairly punished in the box score because they had more big plays than the Patriots did. And last thing I'll say on the DVOA rankings, for everyone who thinks the Patriots defense played well against the Dolphins offense ranked 14th in DVOA of all 32 teams this past weekend. So slightly above average. Football Outsiders are saying the Dolphins had a slightly above average offense. Consequently, the Patriots defense ranked 18th, a slightly below average defense. So 14th ranked offense for the Dolphins, 18th ranked defense for the Patriots based on that game. So Football Outsiders is telling you the Dolphins offense outplayed the Patriots defense. And you agree, I agree. I think that's what it was. But because they only scored 17 points and Tua threw a bad pick, that's not really how people are discussing the game, when people should be giving credit to the Dolphins offense for putting together two touchdown drives and icing the game with 3 minutes left on the road in a division game in week one. So, yeah, I thought the Dolphins offense had a good day, and Waddle's great.
You know what? You nailed all the points on the head. Like, I don't have anything to add to it. But the only thing I'm going to say with that interception was, you know what? Yeah, like, you had Matthew Judon barreling down at you. You hear my dog barking because my parents just got home. But, yeah, that's just the thing. Like, you can't really put that one interception on him. He was just trying to get rid of it, and, yeah, just luck happens to go its way. It's like, we can talk about it quickly, but Monday night's game, Lamar had the same thing too, where I believe he had a ball go off an offensive lineman's hand, or it was either Lamar or Derek Carr, one of them threw an interception that was like that, where it went off the lineman's, when it went off the lineman and it bounced right. I'm pretty sure it was Lamar who threw it, who basically threw it. It tipped off a lineman's hand, or just went off like the top of his hand or his wrist, and then the opposing team caught it and got the interception. Which, I'll say this right now, for that game, the first 55 minutes were boring as fuck, but then the last 5 minutes were fun. And
They were crazy. I think it was Carr. Well, I mean, I think Lamar threw it off an offensive lineman's head, and it was a dropped pick, but Lamar didn't have a pick. So it was –
That's what it was.
Yeah, it's either the drop pick or it's Derek Carr's pick in the end zone. But yeah, it's probably the one of the two, either way.
I'm pretty sure it was the Lamar one. I think the other one was a clean one, which I will say this right now. Man, Marlon Humphrey, I think, is one of the best corners in football.
Yeah, yeah, and he was playing well until that very last play. But it was also a weird situation. It's like the Ravens had to go all-out blitz there because the Raiders are just going to settle for a field goal. So I don't blame them, even though obviously it didn't work out.
Exactly. But no, I have nothing else to really add for like our game. Like, look, it is what it is. You guys got the win. I know I'm going to say this too. I think the win was more important for you guys than it was for us. Because yes. I know for you guys, obviously, because you have Buffalo coming up and then you have Vegas in Vegas next Sunday. So we'll see where those go. But the fact that you have Buffalo, you have like this pestering little monkey that's been on your back for years with Josh Allen, like not being able to beat him. You needed that win. So now, you know what, Sunday, you can go in building with confidence. Because, like, look, now you're 1-0. If your best case scenario, your worst case scenario now is 1-1, which is not a bad worst case scenario. Meanwhile, their worst case scenario is 0-2, which we'll get into later. Just because, like, the way I like to do it for games is just go down the list and head to, like, from what I see on my app, from the score app, from what the first game listed is to the Monday Nighter. I would do this game right now, but obviously it's live, and I think we both agree we want the football team to win. Mm-hmm. But Broncos, Jags, I literally have nothing better to say. Like, I'm picking the Broncos to win. Broncos were one of my not surprised in the sense that they won, but surprised in the sense of how well they played and how good Teddy Bridgewater looked. But my question to you is six points. Do you think they cover? Or do you think they win by more than six, or do you think it's a closer game?
I would not pick them to cover. Obviously, the Jaguars, like we kind of talked about, like when we gloriously predicted the Texans to win its first Survivor League, one of the arguments we kept bringing up was the Jags could start slow. They have a rookie quarterback, Urban Meyer, transitioning to the NFL. They just lost ETN. Like, they kind of have a lot of things going on. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Jags, like, put up a stinker. Certainly, Vic Fangio may be, like, the lower-rent version of Belichick against the rookie quarterback. I mean, I saw him destroy Tua last year, who took six sacks against the Broncos. So, like, I definitely could see the Broncos destroying here, but I wouldn't pick them to cover because it's in Jacksonville. They're going to have fans. It's going to be Trevor Lawrence's first ever home game. You know, the Broncos, I think the Broncos, even though they look good, and I'll also bring up, I'm the one who on our AFC preview podcast, I picked the Broncos to go to the playoffs. I said they'd go 10-7. So I wasn't surprised at all to see them kill the Giants. I still think they need to show a little more before we're super confident that they can blow out a team. Like, it's one thing to think they're going to win, but if you think they're going to cover seven, you think they're going to win by, I mean, six, you think they're going to win by a touchdown or more. And I just don't think they've shown enough yet to prove that they deserve that kind of respect. So I would pick them to win. I'd take the Jags on the spread.
I'm going to take the Jags on the spread, but I'm going to take the Broncos to win, but I'm going to go 24 to like 20 kind of game.
Yeah, and remember, if you're taking the Jags, for if anyone's going to bet this, like, you can get a backdoor. You could be down 10 points and get a touchdown late in the fourth quarter. And you could also push. 6.6 is a key number. You can lose by two field goals, like 26-20, and still push. So, yeah, a lot of outs, as they say in poker, for you to cash in on this one.
Exactly. But, like, that's just one thing with this game. Like, that, I think, like, Denver, too. I know they're going to make the playoffs. It's just for me, my big thing is they don't have a challenge until week their schedule is like obviously Giants, then Jaguars, then home to the Jets next week. But then after that, they're October, Ravens, Steelers, Raiders, Browns football team. If they can make it out of that five-game stretch in October with, say, a 3-2 record,
mm-hmm.
then I think I'll start to buy stock in them. But if they, like, say if they go 3-0 but then go 1-4 in October – I'm going to be very hesitant on that.
Yeah, I agree on that. This would be a huge win for Denver. Like, their home field advantage is great. So, like, if they can get two road wins to start the year, that'd be really nice.
Exactly. And moving on now to your game, a second here. Buffalo versus Miami. Buffalo is a 3-point favorite, 3.5-point favorite. The over/under at 48. If I'm a betting man, I am a betting man actually now. Which someone messaged me tonight saying I should get a gambling hat and a fedora. But I don't know if that's my style. You know, I'm going to do it. I'm picking you guys to go 2-0. I honestly think, you know what? I'm going to say this, though. I think 3.5 points. I think this is like a 3-point game. I'm going to put a score. I'm going to put a little bow on the score. I'm going to go 27. Actually, you know what? Yeah, 27-24 I think would be the score of this game. I think it's a little higher scoring than last week. But at the same time, too, I think your defense can do just enough because Buffalo's O-line was really not that – Buffalo's O-line against Pittsburgh, man, there were some moments that made you kind of go, like, kind of panic. But, no, I'm thinking, you know what? You guys are going to get that monkey off your back. And because I'll say this right now. If the Bills start 0-2, man, there's going to be a lot of rumblings about – is this a one-year wonder? But if they win on Sunday, obviously that goes away. But if they go 0-2, I think you start to sound, ring some alarm bells at Buffalo.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. This is obviously obviously a big game for the Dolphins, a big game for Tua, a big game for the defense, like pretty much all around. And, you know, one, like I said, I thought the Dolphins looked good last week. Football Outsiders has them as the 10th overall team in football right now. The 14th ranked offense and the 10th ranked defense. So Football Outsiders, as of now at least, thinks this was a top 10 team last week. And I think they look good. I would just the last thing, by the way, on that Patriots game that I forgot to mention earlier that I think is important. I've seen a lot of people say, well, if the Patriots don't fumble, they just obviously win that game. And I'll say, look, if the Patriots had scored a touchdown, then, you know, that's one thing. If the Patriots had settled for a field goal and the Dolphins offense were given, you know, 2.5 minutes to drive for a field goal drive, with the best kicker in football. I mean, Justin Tucker's the best kicker in football, but Jason Sanders last year, first team All-Pro. So if they needed a field goal to win that game, like based on how they played on that final drive, I think they would have gotten it because they were backed up on their own 3-yard line and they drove 30 yards in 3 minutes to ice the game so the Patriots couldn't get the ball back. So I think the Dolphins, if they needed a field goal, would have gotten it and would have won, even if Harris didn't fumble. But if the Patriots had scored a touchdown, maybe they would not have scored a touchdown in response. So that kind of sums up my thoughts on the game. So I very much resent the whole, like, they would have won if Harris didn't fumble. I don't agree with that. You don't know that for sure. It depends on what would have happened. And they weren't great in the red zone all day. So not even a guarantee they score a touchdown. So, yeah, I thought Dolphins look good. Big game. You know, Brian Flores has been destroyed by Josh Allen. He's 0-4 against Josh Allen in the last four games. And Josh Allen has lit him up, too. Like, 11 yards per attempt, 100 yards rushing. Like, he's just killed him in these games. But this is huge for the Dolphins. If the Dolphins win this game, they will essentially have a 2.5-point lead, 2.5-game lead over the Bills in the division. If the Dolphins win this game, they only have four division games left, and two of them are against the Jets. To put it in context, last year, the Dolphins went 10-6, but they went 3-3 in the division, swept the Jets, split with the Pats, got swept by the Bills. If they win this game and they sweep the Jets again, they'll go 4-2 in the division this year, even if they lose to the Patriots and the Bills in the rematch games. And if they go 4-2, that could be the difference in them making the playoffs this year. I really do think if the Dolphins win this game, you know, knock on wood, like who knows with injuries and all things like that. But if they win this game and they just like kind of do their usual thing every week, I think it's going to be really hard for them to miss the playoffs if they win this game. So this is huge. There's not going to lie to you, Griff, like the atmosphere. I was talking to one of my friends about this. The atmosphere in Miami, like, it feels like a December game. Like, it just feels like such a huge game. Yes, it's only September. Yes, it's only week two. But it just feels so important. If they win, if they finally get that demon off their back, you know, it would just do so much for this team, so much for the confidence of this team. This feels like their moment. It feels like it's finally time. Like, I just think Brian Flores is too good of a defensive coach to keep getting killed by Josh Allen. You didn't see a lot of Jalen Phillips in week one, but I think there's going to be like more use of him this week. There's some belief that him as the spy for Josh Allen might be in the game plan because he's really athletic. Like Belichick raved about his athleticism before the Dolphins game. He's big enough and fast enough to chase him and not just chase him, but take him down. That's the problem with Allen. Like even when defenders get to him, they can't bring him down because he's a fucking tank. So the belief is that with Jalen Phillips, that could be our ace in the hole. That is the difference that we didn't have last year in the last two games against him. So I like the Dolphins' chances. I do think the Bills, you know, it feels weird to predict the Bills to go 0-2. I know they're desperate, but I think the Dolphins are going to be desperate too. I think the Dolphins realize they cannot lose this game if they want to win the division. And I think the Dolphins, you know, on the spread, the Dolphins only lost by 4 points last year in the Miami game. They only lost by four with Fitz. So 3.5, and I think this Finns team is better than last year's team, and I think the Bills are a little worse than last year's Bills team. I think 3.5 is money. Like, even if the Bills win this game, I just can't see the Bills killing us in Hard Rock. I think if the Bills win, they'll win by a field goal. So I really love the Dolphins on the spread for that reason.
I'm going to hate myself for this, but do you remember up until the Miracle in Miami how close it was? It was like just punch for punch.
Yeah, yeah.
I could see this game being very a similar kind of game, you know, where it's just possession for possession, just punch for punch.
Yeah, and it could be the kind of game where, like, the Dolphins force turnovers again, because Allen, you know, last week he kind of started – it's just one game. Like, we can't overreact, obviously. But that Josh Allen of last week looked like the 2019 version of Josh Allen. Like, he was inaccurate on his deep ball. He took some bad sacks. He put the ball in harm's way a few more times. It could be the kind of punch-for-punch game where the Dolphins get, like, an Xavien Howard interception in the fourth quarter, you know, like a Bills fumble in the first quarter, and then everyone will say what they said in the Patriots game. Oh, the Bills had more yards, but the Dolphins got lucky with turnovers again. I'm just not sure it's luck. Like, here's a stat for everyone. They have a turnover in 23 straight games, which leads the NFL. The team that's in second has a turnover in 8 straight games. That's the difference, 23 and 8. Maybe they are just on a really crazy hot streak of luck, or maybe they're just a really well-coached team like the Patriots were in the early 2000s, where they would get turnovers pretty much every game. The Patriots would always rank in the top 10 in turnovers under Belichick. Like, maybe being first in the league is not possible, but they can be like a top 5, top 6 team in turnovers. So we'll see.
You know what? We'll see. But I'm excited for this game. I'm going to be keeping up with it. Obviously, my boys might want to talk, but we'll get into that later.
I'll be there. By the way, so I'll be there in a fit of nerves.
I was about to say you're going to be there, and I'm pretty sure. I think I saw that Danny is going to be at the Patriots Jets game on Sunday. Yep. The Patriots Jets game. So let's make that 2 YWC Football Talk guests that will be at football games this coming Sunday.
Both huge games for both teams. Yeah.
Yeah. No doubt about that. But moving on now for the Houston. Oh, and also, too, I just saw a commercial for a documentary coming up that's going to be about the NFL in Canada, featuring Javon Holland, Chase yep. Claypool, and Chuba Hubbard.
Nice.
Through Uninterrupted Canada.
Javon Holland, by the way, highest rated rookie in week one of any – I think – I don't know if it was any rookie or defensive rookie – but definitely the highest-rated defensive rookie of anyone in week one. So that was encouraging.
He had that really good tackle against
Jonnu.
On Jonnu.
Yeah.
Just the fact he was willing just to throw himself out there. Like, you know what? I'll always be supportive of Canadians no matter what team they play. For, like, even I saw Benjamin St. Juice in this game. But moving on to the Houston Texans and the Cleveland Browns. I think we're both going to go – do we both want to go Cleveland here? Are you going to be surprised again? And 12 – I still have a feeling that they're going to cover 12.5, but I could still see this being like a, I don't know, like a 23-13 kind of game.
Yeah, I'm not predicting any like crazy upset here or anything like that. Because I do think it could kind of go either way. So I mean, not either way in terms of the result, either way in terms of the spread. I think Cleveland's going to win. I think this is a good team, even though I think they're overrated. It's not like I think they're overrated in the sense that I don't think they're a Super Bowl team. It's not like I think they're a bad team or anything like that. And, you know, I'm a little skeptical of the Jags, so I'm not sure the Texans are as good as they showed. I also think the Texans in week one, it was a very emotional spot. Like, they've been just destroyed all summer. This team sucks. This is going to go on. They're going to go 0-16. They're horrible. The Deshaun Watson stuff nonstop, the Deshaun Watson trade rumors, like, they went through a lot. It just seemed like a very emotional game. And you see this from team like Danny, one of the worst Jets teams I've ever seen in my life, the 2012 Jets that went 6-10. And they were just getting killed by the New York media all summer that year. And in week one, they just destroyed the Bills, like 48-10 or something like that. Because like all that pent up emotion of being dunked on for a summer, like manifested on the field. So I don't know if the Texans are going to have that same energy in week two. I think water finds its level. I think the Browns win. I think the Browns bounce back. Whether or not they cover, it seems like it's going to entirely depend on whether or not the Texans get like a fourth quarter touchdown drive in. That will determine whether or not they cover. So I'm kind of staying away from the spread, but I like Cleveland here.
Yeah, same. I'm going Browns. But moving on to the next game. Bengals and Browns, which I gotta say, Bengals really impressed me week one. Yeah. And for that, I'm going with Cincinnati to win, but I'll take them to cover 2.5 as well. I said this because I don't know if you know him, but Tommy Stout, he was on Monday, and he's a Bears fan from the Chicagoland area. But I basically said to him, and we've agreed on the same thing, like, okay, the offense didn't look too bad. The front seven looked good. But, man, their secondary looked terrible against the Rams.
You can feel the lack of Kyle Fuller start to rear its ugly head. I got the Bengals here, too. I took the Bengals on the spread. I actually bet money on that. And I think the Bengals are not a bad – this is the best, in my opinion, risky Survivor League pick this week because – you know, it's not like the Bengals are going to be a playoff team, I don't think. Their division, I just think their division's too hard. Even if they look good, they're going to have to beat Baltimore and Cleveland and Pittsburgh, and I think that's going to be tough. So not really a team you're worried about saving for down the line, so it's okay to burn them here. They're not going to be super popular because they're underdogs, because there's not a lot of trust in Zach Taylor. But I think if you wanted a riskier Survivor pick this week, I think this would be the one where, yeah, there's obviously risk, but there's a good chance they win, and then you don't have to worry about using them again. So I like the Bengals here on the spread and on the money line.
Same. You know what? I'm in the same. I just for survival, I still don't know what I'm going to do, but that's one that I'm going to consider. Next up, we have
San Francisco. Last thing I just wanted to say, Bengals defense also a little better than people think. They were 19th in Football Outsiders DVOA this past weekend, and you know, they brought in Trey Hendrickson. Jesse Bates is one of the best safeties in the league. Sam Hubbard, like, rush as well. Like, I think their defense is going to be better than people think. They're not going to be like a bottom five defense like they normally are every single year. I think it's going to be middle of the pack. And if their defense is middle of the pack and their offense takes a step forward, that could help them. So yeah, that's all I wanted to say. Moving on.
You know what this Bengals team, I think of it because of two things. One, it reminds me of like those mid 2010s Bills teams, you know, where they would get off to like a 3-0 start and then just go on like a 4 or 5 game losing streak, or even to the 2012 Cardinals just happened to, where they got a huge upset week 2 in New England. I remember, I think it was like John Skelton was a quarterback. They started off like, I think 4-0, but then they finished 4-12.
Yes. I know the exact game you're talking about. That was when the 2012 Cardinals. That was the game where Ken Wisenhunt was asked in a press conference, how can you fix this team, like, later in the season? Like, what does this team need to improve? And Ken Wisenhunt just told the reporter, can you play quarterback for us?
I think it was Kevin. I think Skelton got hurt, and then it was Kevin Kolb who started the rest of the year.
Yeah. It was they started 4-0. They beat the Dolphins in overtime, I remember. Brian Hartline had like 200 yards receiving in that game. And they started 4-0, and then they started 4-0, and they finished 5-11. They went on a 9-game losing streak. Yikes.
Yikes, indeed. Well, anyway, back to what I was saying before, moving on. San Francisco at Philly, 3-point spread cover for San Francisco, over-under at 49.5. I love how Philadelphia Eagle fans are kind of like on this like high horse, because I'll be honest with you, same thing too. Jalen Hurts, holy crap. Devonta Smith looked really good. Part of me thinks, I think this is going to be a close game, but I think San Francisco, for Jesus Christ, made of glass. But I like San Francisco, but I feel like last week what happened with them was, I think they just took their foot off the gas when they were up a lot, and that's why they kind of let Detroit come back into it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Indianapolis Colts hard knocks in season.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's I like that they're doing the Colts just because of the whole Carson Wentz drama and everything like that. But no, moving on to this game, I'm going to the Niners. I think it'll be a close game, though. I can see it being like a 23-20, you know, where it's a lot of those like close third down drives where they have to set off a field goals, stuff like that. I'm also gonna say with San Francisco too, I feel like we're not gonna see I think we're going to see Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think we'll see Trey Lance anytime soon, but I could see him being put in there for a couple trick plays here and there, just to like kind of, you know, spice things up, kind of like what you were saying, what the Dolphins did.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And like, you know, like her, what's his name? Trey Lance threw a touchdown pass last week. So like, you know, he's definitely involved in their package sets, and you're seeing the Bears do this with Fields, like kind of having their wildcat quarterback. But the key to this, and I think that's what makes it different from like what the Jets did with Brad Smith, what the Dolphins did with Pat White years ago, talking 10 years ago now. You have to be willing to let the guys throw. So Lance and Fields, they're not just coming in to run the ball. If they need to, they can throw for a touchdown pass. And that's what makes it like really effective, because it's a triple threat. Like you don't know what's going to happen. So I would agree with you there. I think it's going to be a close game. I think the Eagles could win this game.
I have a weird feeling that the Eagles, kind of like the Cardinals we just talked about, but maybe not quite that bad. They seem to me like a team that can go 3-1 in September and then slowly get worse as the year goes along. So because they're like a top-heavy team. They're really good in the trenches, but they're very old. Like, if they get a few offensive line injuries, like, their three best offensive linemen, I think, are all over the age of 30. So if they get some offensive line injuries, that could, like, derail their season like it usually does. And on the defensive line, you know, they're relying on Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham, who both are also over 30. So I think they seem to me like a team that will start hot in September, get worse as the year goes along. Would not surprise me at all if the Eagles win this game, saying it right now.
You know what this team reminds me of? Last year's Bears.
Yes.
You know where they get a few wins, but then October, November hits and comes around, they get a couple injuries, and they just hit a snide where they start playing bad. But like I said earlier, too, and also one thing I want to say as well is one player I think that kind of goes unnoticed, but at the same time, too, you know him for his character. But I think if he were to retire, I think Jason Kelce is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, been in the league long enough, played at a high level for long enough. Yeah, definitely don't disagree there.
Yeah, but no, I wouldn't be shocked either if that happened. Like I said before, Jalen Hurts looked really good. Devonta Smith is going to be a good receiver in this league. But yeah, I agree with you. They're just at that age where I feel like that's literally it. That's what they're at that age where they're just too old. And I think we'll talk about them, obviously, because their game's at 4 o'clock for some reason. But with Atlanta, I think everyone kind of found out, like, look, this team – they still think they have a chance, but in reality, they're just pushing off rebuilding.
Yeah, they've got work to do. I mean, you know, we still have to see with. I mean, I know we're gonna actually we'll talk about them later. So I'll just wait till we get to their game.
Only other thing I'll say too is that hopefully Elijah Mitchell plays well, and I think George Kittle has a better fantasy week. Because I know a lot of people were pissed off because he only had 11 points in week one.
And so, same with Ayuk, who had a bagel. I understand that, like Shanahan said, that he's got to do some work to take snaps away from Trent Sherfield. Ayuk was really good last year. Like, I know our friend Trademark was asking me if he should bench Ayuk for someone that was like someone that was like clearly worse than Ayuk. I forget who it was. Bench Ayuk for James Conner. And I told him no, because I just can't believe Ayuk. Ayuk was too good last year to not be used. I don't think Debo Samuel is going to hog all the air yards and all the targets like he did last weekend. I think you'll see a more balanced distribution. I think Ayuk will get his. I think Kittle will get his too. So,
also with Ayuk, last year, Sunday Night Football, Eagles, Niners, Ayuk had that incredible touchdown pass from, I believe, Nick Mullins.
Yep. Very true.
Yep. Well, moving on next, Saints-Panthers. Saints are a 3.5 favorite, which... not a surprise for that they won, but the surprise for how much they won by, how much they dominated. But with the Saints here, I'm picking them. And I know the Jets and the Panthers looked good last week. Jared and I heavily pumped their defense's tires on the NFC preview show. I even started coming on saying, I think Brian Burns is an outside defensive player of the year candidate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he'll win, but he'll be in that top five. He could be in the top 10 conversation. But I think this is a game where, kind of like what happened for the Bills and the Dolphins for the last like few seasons, New Orleans always seems to have the number for Carolina. And I think at the end of the day, too, if I'm the biggest battle I have to pick here, the New Orleans defensive line is a lot better than Carolina's offensive line, which really is not that good.
Yeah, I fully agree. You know, it's tough. This one to me is tough for the spread because I just hate taking division road favorites. It's just – this is the spot like I would do with – this is like I'm biased as a Dolphins fan. Like the Patriots, they come to Miami. They're like 8-point favorites in Miami. And I would just always like, no. Like take the home team. Take the home division team. They're never as – division games are usually close. It's never as bad as you think. But also the spread is not that big either. It's only
3.5.
Yeah, like – you could totally see the Saints winning 24-20. And if that happens, most people would say, oh, the Panthers like put up a good fight. But so you could totally see that 24-20 Saints win. So I don't know what to do with the spread. I think the Panthers are better than they were last year. I think I'm not confident that Darnold was better than Teddy when both are healthy. I think Teddy sprained his MCL last year. And he wasn't the same quarterback after that. Like, if you look at his numbers before and after the MCL sprain, it was very different. And this was true of Jacoby Brissett with the Colts, too. Like, remember the Colts in 2019? They beat the Chiefs. They started 5-3, and then they struggled the second half of the year. It's very similar. Like, he had an MCL injury, and it was never the same before and after. So, you know, I don't really know, like, I don't really know if Darnold's like a huge upgrade per se, but I think the defense is better. I think the coaching is better because I think Matt Rhule is more comfortable in the second season. I think it's going to be a close game. I don't think the Saints are quite as good as they showed. I believe in the defense, and I believe in Sean Payton and Kamara and Jameis to an extent, but I don't think they're quite as good as they were against the Packers. So I just think it's going to be a close coin flip game. I don't really know who wins. I don't know who covers, so stay away from me.
Last year, too, the first time the Saints and the Panthers played was also before, because I believe Teddy hurt his MCL. It was a Thursday night game, I believe, against the Falcons.
Yeah, the Falcons.
And a couple weeks before that, Teddy played against the Saints in New Orleans, and the game was 27-24 for the Saints. I believe they won on a Will Lutz field goal. So
yep.
I could see a very similar game, you know, 24-21, 27-24, like that kind of style of game. But anyway, I'm going with the Saints this week because next week they're obviously going to lose. Rams at Colts. I'm going to say this right now. If the Colts' offensive line plays the way they did last week, Carson Wentz is going to be on his ass for at least half this game.
Yep. They have to play a lot better. And I think Braden Smith got hurt too, like, to build on what happened last week. This is such a tough one for me because, like, you could totally see the world where, like, the Colts – bounce back. Like, you could totally see the world where the offensive line looks like last year's offensive line. They look like a better offense. It's back and forth. It's close. I think the Colts defense is still good. I understand Russell Wilson tore him up, but I'm just like, what the Colts defense, like, in their zone, their two deep safety looks, they're not going to give up the kind of touchdowns the Rams scored last week. The bomb to Cooper Kupp, the bomb to Van Jefferson, like, I just don't think it would happen the same way. I understand they gave up long touchdowns to Tyler Lockett, but I think zone defenses like this that are well coached, they tend to be really good at limiting big plays. And I just have a hard time seeing them do that 2 weeks in a row. So I think they can limit the Rams' big plays. I think they can look good, but like you said, you know, this is another team that is projected to start slow. Like, they had the issues with COVID. They had the issues in training camp. No Carson Wentz for pretty much the entire summer. You could totally see them starting slow, like 10 sacks, and not actually 10, but like 6 sacks in this game, and them losing by 10 points. You could totally see that. So it's just the Colts, I think, have the widest range of any team in football right now. Like, they could be really good or they could be really bad. Like, no one really knows because we just haven't really seen the team together consistently long enough. And I agree with you. If the offensive line isn't in shape, it's going to be ugly.
And also, too, a player to watch out for if you are playing Daily Fantasy is Zach Pascal. He's a player, yeah. Like, obviously, we have our boy, Pittman. He didn't have the best game week one. He's just getting warm. Just give him some time.
Absolutely.
But this is a game, though, I feel like the Colts have to win because of their schedule. We all know they have the murderer's row where I believe they have Tennessee week three, which we'll get into later. But I'm going to go with the Rams here to win. They also were the top team for play action pass in week one. I feel like they're going to do that, but I feel like if the Colts secondary will be better at recognizing everything like that, I feel like Matt Eberflus is going to have a better game plan. But I still am going to go with a pretty wide margin of victory. I'm going to say 31-20 Rams win.
I think ultimately if I had to pick one of the two outcomes we discussed, it would probably be a Rams win. It would probably be the Colts O-line not looking good, Wentz throwing a bad pick somewhere along the line. So I'm going to predict that as well. But I would not – if the Colts O-line could just get their act together and the Rams and the Colts defense doesn't allow the big plays that the Rams had last week, it would not surprise me at all if the Colts win this game because it is at home. They lost at home last week. It's going to be really rough for their season if they lose two home games to start the year. But I just need to see it. I need to see it first. I need to see them look good. Then from this point forward, I will start, like, predicting them to win and betting on them, et cetera.
Exactly. Like, this is a game I'm not betting on at all. Like, this is, like, kind of a stay away, like, don't want to bet it kind of game. But, yeah, no, I'm just going to go with the Rams just because, look, from what I saw last week and from the Colts, like, what you saw from the two teams. But for all I know, I could be wrong on this. But at the end of the day, I'm just going to go with the team I feel like has the better chance at winning this game.
Yeah.
Moving on to a game now where I honestly think could be a sneaky good game this weekend between the Raiders and the Steelers. Also, I just remember today, protege versus apprentice game with Mike Tomlin and John Gruden, because Mike Tomlin got his start with he was on the Buccaneers coaching staff in the early 2000s. But it's weird to think this, too, that Mike Tomlin has a better resume than John Gruden.
Yep. Yep. All things considered, absolutely. It's not particularly close either.
Yes. The spread is actually at 6 points right now, which honestly, I would take Vegas with the points. I think Vegas covers the spread, but I'm going to go with the Steelers for the win. I just feel like even though the offensive line for Pittsburgh isn't that good, I like their defense a lot. I like Pittsburgh's defense, like T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward, all looked good last week. Ben looked pretty okay. Najee Harris was a player I was always kind of concerned about going into the year just with the new offensive line. He played really well week one. I'm going to go, like I said, I'm going Steelers, but I'm taking the Ravens, excuse me. I'm taking the Raiders to cover 6 points. But this also, too, for those of you out there who aren't too familiar with old school football, this is a classic NFL rivalry.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, deep history, deep tradition. Very randomly, the other day, like I think because Derek Carr was asked about the Immaculate Reception, which was which was against the Raiders, and he even commented, "Yeah, that ball touched the ground." Famously, Franco Harris's catch off the hit from Jack Tatum that he scored a touchdown on in the last play of the game in the divisional round of the playoffs in 72. You know, either team was going to get beat by my Dolphins either way. That was their year. The Dolphins went 17-0. So I don't think it's that big of a deal, but nonetheless, the game by the Raiders beat writers were publishing like book reviews talking about that game. Like there was a lot of coverage of it this week because when these two teams play each other, it brings up, you know, a lot of good team history. So that's what makes it a fun matchup. Here's a random fun fact is like the Raiders, when they were like very bad, they always beat the Steelers in these games. They beat them in 2018, the first year of the John Gruden rebuild. They beat them in 2013 with Terrell Pryor rushing for a 95-yard touchdown. Like every year the Steelers have missed the playoffs, they lost to the Raiders in the 2010s. So this is your litmus test for the 2021 Steelers. If they lose this game, they are not going to make the playoffs. I think it'll be a very close game. I have no strong feel on it. I will say the Ravens blitzed Derek Carr a lot last week, and we'll talk about the Ravens and the Chiefs later. Derek Carr is actually pretty good against the blitz. His numbers against the blitz are really, really good. It's when you can get pressure organically with four that he starts to struggle. Not when you blitz. When you get pressure organically, that's when he like starts checking it down and panics and makes bad decisions, etc. So the Steelers last week against the Bills, they didn't blitz a whole lot. They just organically got pressure with Watt, Melvin Ingram looked great, etc. And the Raiders O-line, to me at least, it did look a little bit worse than last year. So I think the Steelers can make his life hell by getting pressure organically with four, not blitzing. And I think their D-line can beat the O-line on this day. But the general rule with Mike Tomlin is you take him as a big underdog. Like last week was a classic spot for him to like cover the spread. Like winning outright was a different thing. But he's usually really good as an underdog and really bad as a favorite. So it's the spread, I think. I'm kind of with you. I think like Steelers win like 23-20.
I'm going to go a little different. I'm going to go 27-23 with this game. That also does hit the over. The over under for this game is 47 points. Because I was wrong with Monday night. I thought Monday night's under was going to hit with, I believe it was 50. I didn't expect the game to be 33-27 at all, to be honest with you. But no, we'll talk about the Ravens a bit later. But no, this game, like, I think, because if the Steelers start 2-0, they're going to turn some heads. But at the same time, too, the Raiders going 1-0 is huge for them, because all things considered, because then now they obviously have the Steelers this Sunday, but then they have your Dolphins next Sunday. So I think if the Raiders were to lose this game, it's not the end of the world. But even though I did say that I'm picking the Steelers, it wouldn't shock me to see if the Raiders did win this game.
Yeah, and I think next Sunday is actually a bad spot for the Dolphins if they win. If they beat the Bills, like that's such an emotional adrenaline rush beating the Patriots and the Bills to start the season that I think at Vegas with that very loud. Yeah, I kind of think so. Even though like there's revenge for Tua specifically because he got benched in that game. But I don't know if there's revenge for the Dolphins team as a whole. They ended up winning. If anything, the Raiders are going to want payback. So, yeah, I think I am concerned about that spot. If the Dolphins win, that the Raiders game could easily be a trap game for them.
I completely understand. And now moving on to the last game of the 1 o'clock slot, obviously Patriots at Jets. We all see the injuries. I think you all know where I stand. I think we know where Big Rat's going with this. I heard people saying this. I'm going to agree with it. If the Jets offensive line doesn't get their act together, Zach Wilson's going to get hurt eventually. Now, I'm not saying that wishing for injury or anything like that. I'm just saying that from a point of you need to protect your quarterback. Because the fact that the Carolina Panthers defense, which is good on its own, like I said, Brian Burns, Derek Brown actually had a really good game last Sunday, the first round pick out of Auburn last year. But the fact that they got, I think it was six, he got sacked six times last Sunday.
Yeah.
You've got Josh Uche, who was breakout candidate for this year, second year player out of Michigan, Chase Winovich, Dante Hightower, Kyle Van Noy, Matthew Judon, Dietrich Wise Jr., Devin Godchow coming at you. If the Jets' offensive line has a bad day, this could be a really, really long day for Zach Wilson. But that's the only thing I got to say for this game, because like I honestly think that the Patriots are gonna win. Score, I'm not gonna say a score. I just think it's either gonna be close, like a one possession game, like where the Jets cover, or the Patriots just absolutely destroy them, because that's usually how most Patriots Jets games go.
Yeah, and also, like, when you have a rookie quarterback, like, that's some of the volatility you can expect, because we know the drill. Belichick against the rookie quarterback, he crushes them. We said that on this podcast last year before they played the Chargers, and I remember there was a lot of people. What?
45-0.
45-0. And I remember that week, there was a lot. I saw some people from Vegas saying, like, oh, my God, this is a donkey take. Justin Herbert is much better than most rookie quarterbacks Belichick plays, so it won't be the same because Herbert is like one of the best rookie quarterbacks ever, and it ended up being exactly the same. Herbert played just as bad as every other rookie quarterback does against Belichick. So for that reason, you could totally see, you know, the Jets giving up five sacks, Zach Wilson having like three picks. You could totally see that route, but you could see the case for the Jets covering because Mac is also a rookie quarterback. I didn't get to talk about Mac a whole lot as much as you and Phil did. I'll just say, like, I did think he looked good. You know, I was impressed, though, all things considered. I think, you know, he did check it down a lot, which, you know, when the Dolphins are blitzing, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. So he shouldn't get punished for that necessarily. So I'm not going to hold it against him for the check downs, for making the right play at the right time and not getting sacked. He does deserve credit for that. I think over the course of the season, he's going to have to stretch the field a little bit more because, like I said, he was 27th in the NFL on average depth of target this past weekend. So he's going to have to start taking some of those deep shots, but those guys are going to have to get open also. Like, they're not always going to get open, so he's going to have to go underneath to James White, to the tight ends from time to time. Overall, I thought he played well, but you guys know this. He is a rookie. He could implode at any moment. Like, Tua's worst games last year were against the 5-11 Broncos and the 8-8 Raiders, who had a horrible defense. His worst game was not against Belichick's Patriots. It was not against the Chiefs. It was not against the Rams. It was against, like, two bad teams. Like, you just never know when the rookie quarterback bad games are going to come. So that's the case for how the Jets keep this close. Like, Zach Wilson plays bad, but Mac Jones randomly has a bad game against Salah's defense. But I think the Patriots are going to win. I'm picking them in Survivor this week. I think it's pretty safe, Belichick against rookie quarterback, and yeah.
The only thing I'm going to add to for this game right now is, let me just get my – I just got to get the app back up and running. I closed it for some reason. 43 is the over-under. If I'm betting, I don't like to bet on Patriots games. I would probably go under just because, look, there is that chance that both rookie quarterbacks don't have a good game.
Yep.
That just comes down to, hey, which defense you know can – maybe get a turnover here or there. Because, like, remember last year's game, and I always say this too, where that Monday Night Football game, the Jets should have beat the Patriots, but it was that Joe Flacco play action pass at, like, 6 minutes to go where I was just like, what are you doing? And then he just – J.C. Jackson picked it off.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yep. Moving on to the 4 o'clock window, and the first game features a team who surprised a lot of people last Sunday. The Minnesota Vikings visiting the Arizona Cardinals. I think both teams surprised for different reasons, but this game right here is a 3.5-point spread. 50.5 is the over-under. I think this is a very this is going to be a dogfight kind of game. I think this is going to be your 23-20 kind of football game where the Cardinals aren't as hot as last week, but at the same time too, if that Minnesota defense you know, kind of lets it down a bit, they could be in a lot of trouble. But at the same time, too, I think there's a little bit more trouble in Minnesota than we think. Because, like, look, Justin Jefferson didn't have a good game. Dalvin Cook didn't really have a good game. And Kyler Murray lit up the Tennessee Titans, proving my – we'll get to them later – that the Titans, not exactly as good as last year. But, no, for this one, just straight up, I'm going Arizona.
This is one of the only games that I really don't know. I guess the Colts-Rams was similar. But like I told you, if I had to pick, I would just bet on the Colts not quite having their act together yet and the Rams like being better. But I genuinely don't know what to think. A lot of betting people think this is a good spot for the Vikings, right? Like, it's the classic week two thing. The Cardinals looked great last week. The Vikings lost to the Bengals in a game they were favored. Like, it's the classic, you know, maybe the Vikings are a little bit better than we think. The Cardinals are a little bit worse. Let's not overreact to week one. But I'm with you. I could just totally see the Cardinals like winning this game by 5 points. And if they do that, they cover. So I just don't – I have no real read on this one. I think this is one of the harder games to predict this week. Like, I could see the Vikings bounce back. I could see the Cardinals continuing their you know, offense, especially since their D-line looked pretty good. Their D-line looked pretty good last week, the Cardinals. And the Vikings O-line isn't that great. So, like, that, there's a route for them to, like, control the game on that end as well. So I genuinely don't know. If I had to pick, I guess I'm just going to pick the home team, like, boringly. But, like, I genuinely have no clue what's going to happen this game.
Also, too, homecoming game for Patrick Peterson, who spent the first 10 seasons of his career with the Arizona Cardinals. This is another game where then there's a lot of, like, tricky bets to make this week, like, games I just want to avoid. But the next one, there's no tricks here. 12.5-point favorite. Tampa Bay Buccaneers hosting the Arizona Cardinals. And what I said this before, I don't understand why this is a 4 o'clock game. I understand, look, the Bucs are the Super Bowl champs. This belongs in a 1 o'clock window. This is like Jacksonville versus Denver. Does Atlanta cover or does Atlanta not cover? Because, Jesus Christ, last week was an abomination.
Yeah, Atlanta looked very bad last week. I think they were beat on both line. They were beat on both lines of scrimmage. They got beat on the offense and defensive line because the Eagles, like we talked about, they have very good line play. All their linemen are just very old. They have 5 starting offensive linemen over the age of 30, but they're good. So you could counter by saying, okay, the Eagles are maybe are better than we think. So maybe the Falcons won't be that bad. But the Bucs also have a good O-line. The Bucs also have a good D-line. So that doesn't really counter the argument very well. You know, it is a division game. I think the Bucs secondary looked a little questionable. Like, I don't think that was all the Cowboys receivers. I think their secondary has some leaks to it that I think the Falcons could exploit. But this is just also the kind of game where you could see Matt Ryan getting sacked like 5 times. So I have no clue. I think it's much like the I forget which game we said this about earlier. I think the Texans Brown game. It's gonna depend on whether or not they get a touchdown on their fourth quarter touchdown drive. If they do get a touchdown in the fourth quarter, I think they'll cover. But if they don't, then they won't. It's a division. But for everyone who wants to like bet the Bucs, like if you want to take them in Survivor, fine. But historically, like these are the spots I hate taking. Like the division team that everyone thinks is better being favored by so many points, because anything can happen in a division game. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Bucs only won this game by 7 points. So like, I would just be careful, like, betting on the Bucs here.
I think this is a very good chance for a backdoor cover. Okay, that's a penalty. I thought for a second I missed the call, so I was trying to see where the penalty was.
I'm pissed. I have Sterling Shepard. I wanted that catch.
Yeah. I have the under, though, so I just don't want the points to happen. Like, they could just kick field goals for the rest of the game, and I'll be happy.
Shepard! God, oh, sorry. I'm a little bit ahead. I just pulled something.
Hey, dude, it's okay. Honestly, there's like I know I got money on the line, but it's not like there's anything like, and also too, folks, for the, when I say I got money on the line, I'm not out here. Oh, God, Lord. Because that's the one thing. Also, I'm going to say this too. When we talk about betting, bet responsibly. And if you have a problem, please seek help for it. I'm not saying that just like, oh, make fun of anyone. I'm actually being serious. If you do have a gambling problem, please seek help and only bet. I have a motto, bet what you can afford to lose, or bet what you'll be okay losing. Like, say, for example, and you're not going to regret losing that money. Like, tonight's game, between my two bets, I bet $25.
Yeah. I love betting. Bet responsibly. And, makes it fun. But, yeah, do it properly. And so now what were we on? Bucks? Yeah.
The last thing I'm going to say about this game is I can see a backdoor cover like San Francisco-Detroit. Like, you know, where the Bucks are up, like – 38 to like 17, but then the Bucks end up like the Bucks make it to like, I don't know, 27. So it's like a 38 to 27 kind of game.
Yep.
Next game too, which I honestly think is, you know, I said sneaky good game of the week earlier with Leafs, Raiders, Steelers. This is the game I think will be game of the week, and that's the Cowboys at the Chargers. Chargers open as a 3.5-point favorite, over under at 55. Bet the over if you're betting this game. I think this – I'm going to go Chargers, but this is – I think this is going to be a bit of a dogfight.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Cowboys here. I think it's close, though. I think the – you know, it's going to be a back-and-forth game. I think it's going to be a coin flip game, much like how last week was a coin flip game for the Chargers. You know, there was definitely ways they could have lost that game. So I think it's close. I understand that people are concerned about the Cowboys losing DeMarcus Lawrence, and I get it. Like, you know, he's their best defensive player. That's obviously a big deal. But, you know, their D-line wasn't good last week anyways. Brady, I think, was the least sacked quarterback in the league or the least pressured quarterback in the league, one of the two. So I think, you know, I think their defense was going to get beat up either way. So I don't think it particularly affects the outcome of the game necessarily. Obviously, it would have helped to have him, not denying that. But I think I'm going to take the Cowboys. I'm definitely going to take the Cowboys on the spread if you can get it at 3.5. Because even if the Cowboys lose this game, they're probably going to lose it by a field goal. It's probably going to be a really close game. So definitely take the Cowboys on the spread would be my recommendation at 3.5.
Oh, fuck off. Fuck off. Oh, sorry about that, folks. Just the Darius Slayton touchdown, man. Nice. What was I going to say? I think it's at 41.5. So if they can, like, the football team can, like, get a touchdown later. Oh, it's only – oh, yeah, so never mind. I lost my train of thought. Yeah, this is the makings of, like, you know, like a 20 – like a 30 to 27, like a 31 to 27, somewhere in that range kind of game. Because the what was I going to say? The Chargers didn't put up a crazy amount of points last week, but they did enough just to win. But my whole thing with the Dallas Cowboys is I feel like if their offense has a bad game, that's when they'll lose. Like, I think their defense could cost them games, but obviously it's not that good. But I think if the offense does enough to win, that'll happen. I think this game comes down to how good does the Chargers defense play.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. And it's very possible that it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Chargers defense actually like defends the Cowboys defense a little bit better than the Bucks did. But yeah, like I think it's gonna be a close game either way. I'm gonna take the Cowboys by a field goal, but definitely recommend Cowboys on the spread because I think that if they lose, they're not gonna get blown out. So
yeah. Not exactly. Moving on now to the Tennessee Titans at the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle opens as a 6.5-point favorite, Titan over under 54.5. This is such a toss-up just because I'll say this right now, and because mainly who pointed this out was Austin Gale of the Tailgate Podcast of Pro Football Focus. The Todd Downing experiment with the offensive coordinator, because last time he was an offensive coordinator was in 2017 with Oakland, and they had an okay season. I think they were like 7-9 or 8-8 that year. But man, Tennessee did not look good at all last weekend, and Seattle looked really good. So like, I'm honestly really confused at who to pick. But I think 6.5 points, you got to take the points on this one. I think that I don't think the Seahawks cover. I think this is a, you can bet it for survival. I think the Seahawks will win, actually. But when it comes down to it, I think you have to go take the Titans to cover this one. I think they'll lose, but it'll be a close lose. And then setting up a potentially 0-2 versus 0-2 game week 3 between the Titans and the Colts.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way, picking the Hawks by 3. The general rule of thumb with the Seahawks is that they either win by a field goal or lose by a field goal. They play close games every single week, last week being an exception. So I'll stick to that theme. I'm with you.
You still there, Big Rat?
Yeah. Did you hear me?
Sorry, you cut out a bit there.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I was just going to say, yeah, the Seahawks, I have winning by a field goal. The Titans had some, you know, the Titans also had COVID problems that maybe slowed their momentum in training camp a little bit. And I'm gonna pick the Seahawks here by 3.
You know what? I'm going to go the same thing. I'm going to say, like, because 54 points, I could see that potentially happening. I'm going to go 31-28.
Sounds good.
That's my score prediction. Now, Sunday Night Football, Chiefs at Ravens. It's the same thing, the demon on their back with the Chiefs visiting the Ravens. Like, this game, I think, though, is the same as Patriots-Jets. It's either going to be won by a field goal or because, like, remember last year, too, and everyone was – I remember, like – because it was the Raiders-Saints Monday Night Football game where everyone was hyping it up and basically saying this whole, you know, Ferrari-Lamborghini, it's going to be this great Monday Night Football game. And the game was okay, but then 3 nights later we had a great Jet-Bronco game, believe it or not. So I feel like with these teams, it can go one of two ways where it's either, you know, a really close game or like one team just takes it and runs away with it. And if there was to be a team that takes it and runs away with it, it is Kansas City. And I'm going to say this right now, but Panthers and Texans, not an attractive Thursday night primetime matchup.
No, definitely not. I mean, we thought this one was bad, and it's actually been a little better than expected. So then for the Chiefs, then the only other thing I would say is that I think that this game is like obviously a big game for Baltimore. You know, Baltimore keeps losing to Kansas City. And every year, it's kind of the same thing. People predict Baltimore's finally going to win, and then they lose. And this year, we've gone the other direction. Now everyone's saying, well, obviously, the Chiefs own them. The Ravens are going to blitz Mahomes 100 times, and they're going to get lit up, and their offensive line isn't good. Ronnie Stanley's not going to play, apparently. And I just don't – I don't think it's going to go down that way. I think the Ravens need to win this game. It's prime time in front of their home fans. Your offensive and defensive linemen tend to play better at home than on the road. And you kind of saw that on Monday Night Football. On the road, their tackles got destroyed by Yannick Ngakoue and Max Crosby. And I think their tackles are going to play better. Ronnie Stanley isn't going to play, but Villanueva is going to move to left tackle. That's the position he played with Pittsburgh for all those years. So I think he's going to be more comfortable in that spot. Chiefs defense ranked 31st in Football Outsiders DVOA in week one. Their defense got lit up by Cleveland. So I just don't think this is going to follow the same script. I think the Chiefs defense is bad. I think the Ravens are desperate. They're going to be in front of their home fans. It's Sunday Night Football. I think the Ravens are going to put up a good fight. I think this is too well-coached a team to keep making the same mistakes every time. I don't think they're just going to blitz Mahomes like crazy and then have Mahomes light them up for four touchdowns again. I just think this is too smart a team to let that continue to happen. So I'm going to predict the Ravens pull off the upset and win. I would take them on the spread too, because if they lose, I don't think it's going to be like Monday Night Football last year. I don't think they're going to get killed. I think if they lose, they're going to lose close, and you can get them at 3.5 right now. So I'm going to pick the Ravens here.
I'm the same way, by the way. I'm not taking the I think it'd be silly to take the Chiefs to cover 3.5. I think this is a field goal. I'm going to go 28. I'm going to go 27-24 again. I know it's just the generic football scores, but hey, that's what you know and love best. Also, I just realized this game too was I just got to double check the over under for this game. I'm pretty sure it's only at 41.5 when I bet it. So I use a Canadian website called Bet99. So if it is 41.5, I'm in a good boat. But no, this game, honestly, the more I think about it, I don't think there's an ass kicking yet. I know I said, hey, it could happen. At the end of the day, realistically, I can't see that happening, as it is 41.5. So as long as it can stay at 41, I'm golden. Number Deonte Brown almost had a nice catch there. But no, with this game right here, look, I think Baltimore's going to put up a good fight. But at the end of the day, I think Kansas City's going to do just enough to win. You know, like how, and I'll reference it again because look, he's my guy. All those, like, class – like, do you remember the Chiefs-Patriots Sunday Night Football game in 2018 when Mahomes came into Gillette and they went to – like, where the Patriots held him in check, but Mahomes came back? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but you know how Brady had that drive to get them down the field in the field goal range and win it on the field goal at the buzzer?
Yep.
I can see that happening this Sunday night.
Yeah, something very similar. And I just – I don't know if – you know, the Ravens – the Chiefs have defended the Ravens well. Like, Lamar's not played well against the Chiefs in any of these games. So everyone always says, oh, the Chiefs' run defense is so bad, the Ravens should run all over them. And it never happens because they have a good plan for defending Lamar's scrambles. But it just wouldn't surprise me if the Ravens finally run the ball really well, because I just think the Chiefs' run defense is too bad to consistently like get away with this against the Ravens. So that's my prediction.
No, I completely understand that. It's all good. But the next, like, and like, obviously, too, I think we're off this game. But then, like I said, there's just this is, can go either way. I'm just glad this spot is in Sunday Night Football, not Monday Night Football, because it's like for as good, like for as rich in history Monday Night Football is, there's just always something about Sunday Night, you know?
There's an aura. There's an aura that makes it feel like a really big game.
Exactly. And we're only 2 weeks away from a very emotional Sunday Night Football game, which there'll be a lot more events leading up to that on this podcast that I'm starting to get work done on. Last but not least, we got Monday Night Football, Packers at Lions. I'm going to say this right now. Packers get back, but folks, don't go crazy thinking that the Packers are going to blow them out. Honestly, until Green Bay proves it, take Detroit to cover.
I mean, we saw this with the Lions last week, too. They were losing 41-17. And they put up a fight. They rally. They come back. You know, like even if the Packers are up by 3 touchdowns, the Lions aren't going to quit. They're going to like.
God, Cosme's having such a bad game.
Yeah, that was a brutal penalty. My God, I might have killed the entire drive. Like, we'll see if they can do something on 3rd and long. But
so I'm sorry to cut you off. I just noticed that in the moment. Oh man, Sam Cosme has looked like crap.
But yeah, like even if the Lions are down multiple touchdowns, they can mount a comeback. So wouldn't surprise me at all if they covered. Taking the Packers, obviously.
Yeah, I'm taking the Packers to win. But you know what the thing is going to be too? The Packers can win this game, and then everyone's going to be like, "Oh my God, Aaron Rodgers is back. He's MVP. He's this." It's like, no, I think the Packers really have to go out there and have a dominant effort on both sides of the ball to truly prove to the NFL that look, these guys are back to what they were.
Yeah, they need to like it. For them bouncing back, because like the standards are different for them, you know, they're trying to win the Super Bowl. They're not just trying to make the playoffs or, you know, like to be like a team with a winning record. If they want to prove they're a Super Bowl team, you got to crush them. You got to like dig your heels in here. So we'll see.
They're also in, they're on Sunday Night Football next Sunday, week 3 at San Francisco, a spot where they relatively have not done too well, which I just realized I'm probably losing money on this game because I have football team money line and I also have the under. So we'll see if both legs of the – we'll see if maybe I'll probably get one leg of the parlay, hopefully. But if worst case scenario, I'm down some money. But I know I keep going off track, folks. That's what I do. But no, my thing too is if with Green Bay, they relatively have not done well in California. I know they won last year on Thursday night, but – remember 2019, they went to the L.A. Chargers, got their asses handed to them, and then 3 weeks later went back to San Francisco on Sunday Night Football, got their asses kicked, and then we all know about the NFC Championship game in 2020.
Yeah.
My big thing here is, look, if the Packers don't look impressive, I honestly, you start to ring alarm bells. If they have a close game against a team like Detroit, it's something to worry about. But I'm going to say this about the Lions, too, and Jared Goff. I think Jared Goff, now that there's not this pressure on him to, you know, lead the Rams to the Super Bowl. The fact that I think he can just get out there and play football. Like, there's no real, like, oh, hey, if you do this or this, if you make mistakes, you're not going to be reamed out or you're not going to be called out by the media for it. It's just, look, it's another game. It's another day. Will he eventually be replaced by a young draft prospect? Probably. But I'm saying this for now. I'm not going to put the panic alarm on him just because he's bad or just because he has a couple bad games here or there. And even, too, this is a team where, look, I think the same thing can happen. Hey, for all we know, Green Bay comes up to a big lead and then kind of takes their foot off the gas pedal. But at the same time, too, if I'm going for a score line for this, I'm going to say 31-20.
Yeah, I'll predict something similar, probably like 30-20, just to be ever so slightly different. But, yeah, I mean, Jared Goff can kind of do – like, this is what it reminded me of watching them last week, especially, you know, Dan Campbell, like the motivational rallying coach. They can kind of be like – they can kind of be like the 2019 Dolphins, where with Fitzpatrick, you know, they would get killed. You know, they would get killed some weeks. And the Lions will get destroyed some weeks. And there will be other weeks where, like, Fitzpatrick is organizing touchdown drives in the fourth quarter. I can kind of see that here, where, like, some weeks are just going to get destroyed. And then some weeks with Goff and Dan Campbell, like, they're just going to put up a fight. And they're going to, like, never give up and keep going down the field. And I think that was impressive in week 1, just seeing them – have that fight, you know, and I think that's what you'll see. They'll be a bad team. They will lose a lot of games. They probably will get a new quarterback, but like, you know, just for the fun rebuilding year, after some blowouts, some other ones, they'll be rallying in the fourth quarter to keep their fans entertained. And maybe they do that on Monday. We'll see. But yeah, Packers win.
Yeah, you know, Packers won, but like I said, too, take it with a grain of salt if you are a Packers fan, because, look, I don't think you can go from, hey, even to 38-3 getting your asses kicked by the Saints to, hey, if you beat the Lions, the team you're expected to beat. Because even to remember a few years ago, I think there was a Week 17 game where the Lions – I know this is still the Matt Stafford Lions, but the Lions were still out of it. The Packers had to go downfield and win by a field goal.
Yeah,
I was the same day as the big Miami upset against New England. So I'm just saying that right now where it's like, just because one thing happens, just don't take it for granted, you know? Don't take it for a win. Like, where, oh, you know, Packers are going to win. They're going to steamroll them. No, you gotta look at it logically.
The other – both Lions games that you were close. There was the game on Monday Night Football where they won by a field goal at the buzzer. After some
bullshit
bad
reffing, though.
Yeah, with some bad calls. And then they rematched in Week 17. And it was also a close one that they needed to make a field goal at the buzzer. So, yeah.
And I think that, you know what, folks, that's gonna wrap it up. We're hope you enjoy the rest of the Daniel Jones primetime. You know what? November 1st, I'm not saying Big Red, that's the next time you'll be on, buddy, but that's the next time you'll 100% be on is Monday, November 1st, when the Giants travel to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. And then November 22nd, we're watching the Giants play the Bucs, because we all know, look, we'd rather be watching football than Raw.
You could put the Chiefs and the Bucs on primetime against anyone. And you chose the Giants for each of those games. I know those teams have other primetime games, but come on. Why were those like the best games for the Chiefs and the Bucks to put on primetime NFL? But I'm looking forward to it.
Same. I'm sorry to cut you off. I'm going to read out the Chiefs primetime games for this year. They have this Sunday, obviously. Then they have Week 5 versus the Bills, Sunday Night Football. The Monday Nighter against the Giants at Raiders on Sunday Night Football. And then Week 15 they have at the Chargers for Thursday Night Football, and then on to the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers, for their primetime games, obviously they have Dallas Week 1, obviously New England Week 4. This is a weird one too for the Buccaneers. Week 6 at Philadelphia Thursday Night Football.
Wow,
that is. And then strange. Yeah, and then the other ones are week 11 against the Giants at home, and then Week 15 versus the Saints at home. That right there, if the Saints play the way they did, because remember, I also love this too. Everyone's like saying with the Packers, where it was like, remember the Saints whooped the Packers last year 38-3, and then they won the Buccaneers on the Super Bowl. I'm like, yeah, but this was Week 1, and there was a lot of scrutiny, and there was nothing coming out of the box. Last year was just them trying to gel, and then we all saw after their bye week they went on a run and won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree. And so that'll be an interesting game to track. Obviously the Saints look good. But like just looking at the Chiefs schedule, it's like the Chiefs play the Cowboys. Like we couldn't put that on primetime. Like we have to put the Giants game on primetime instead. Like there were other opportunities. But yeah, I look forward to being back on both those shows and obviously possibly another one in between. And yeah, thank you. It's been a lot of fun. As always.
You know what? No problem. My thing when I look at that too is the when I see stuff like that Chiefs Cowboys game, CBS probably like said like or probably gave the NFL a little bit of a money bump to be like, hey, we want that game.
Yeah, that's
my feelings on it. Like for example, NBC probably went to the NFL and saying, look, we want because Sunday Night Football has never had the Ravens and Chiefs before the Patriots Buccaneers. I feel like that was just a no brainer for the NFL. Like. If you put that on 4:25 on a Sunday afternoon, it's just not the same feeling for that Buccaneers return.
Yep, no doubt about that.
Yeah, and before I go, folks, just a time to announce Monday. It is not confirmed yet, but I believe Danny will be on here to recap Sunday's Patriots-Jets game. And then after that, it is Matt Beast week, because Matt Beast will be on Thursday night with me. And next Monday, basically, you know what that means, folks, because it is Patriots-Saints week 3. So he'll be on here to get you all ready for that. For Big Rat 310, I'm Griff. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Hopefully the Dolphins get the win on Sunday. I'll be cheering for them. Hopefully the Patriots get the win on Sunday. So hopefully for both of us next week, it is Victory Monday and not a sad Monday for either one of us.
Yeah. hopefully we get some good news. Thanks, Griff. Appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime, man. Well, anyway, folks, enjoy the rest of this Giants game, even though this will be up long after that game is over or by the time you're listening to it. But enjoy week 2, guys. And like I said before, bet responsibly. And here's to another week of the NFL season. Goodbye, everyone.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast, NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.